friends, I feel as if I have turned into Miss Havisham.
And navigating life and love in the 1990s.
The second we were inside his flat, we fell upon each other like beasts.
What is going on?
As part of BBC Radio 4's 90s season, Sally Phillips reads one of the most iconic novels of the decade.
Bridget!
I suddenly realise everything has shifted.
Bridget Jones's Diary by Helen Fielding begins tonight at 10:45.
Hurrah for the Singletons!
And now on Radio 4, it's time to join David Mitchell and panel as they attempt to unearth more unbelievable truths.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. This week's panel are raring to go, but are contractually obliged to stay. Let's meet them. Please welcome Sindhu V, Marcus Brigstock, Henning Vane and Zoe Lyons. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Henning Vane. Henning is from Germany. He moved here a number of years ago and has since become part of the establishment. It's an idea he got from the royal family. Henning, your subject is colours, the visual appearance of an object, such as green, red, blue or pink, which is a result of the way in which it reflects light. Off you go, Henning. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
Now, I was going to deliver this lecture by going through colours in the order of the rainbow. Well, instead, we are going to go through the colours in the order of snooker balls. Best explained in the words of Chaz and Dave's most famous work, Pot the reds then screw it back for yellow, green, brown, blue, pink and black. Snooker, loopy, nuts are we, me and him and them and me, or something along them lines. In fact, their song Snooker Loopy has been officially recognised by Stonewall as the world anthem of inclusivity. I am so vogue that I find the gay pride flag offensive. How can they claim all the colours of the rainbow are inclusive when they exclude pink, just because it doesn't have a corresponding wavelength of light?
Marcus.
I think possibly that pink doesn't have a corresponding wave band of light, because I think that.
you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yes. Pink does not have a corresponding wavelength of light. In fact, because of this and the fact that it doesn't appear in the rainbow, there's an ongoing dispute about whether or not the colour pink actually exists.
Half the balls in snooker are red because Jesus, who invented snooker, was a communist. Yellow is the least popular of the colours because that's the colour of Judas, who started out as a cab driver in New York. Iscariot's Chariots of Brooklyn. He was struck off for driving with no lights in a pitch black.
Sindhu.
Is it possible that the yellow ball is the least popular in snooker?
Well, that's an interesting... That isn't what Henning asserted. He said yellow is the least popular of the colours. I'm not going to charge you a point.
Thank you.
Because I think you might be right.
Yeah, well.
The yellow ball, because essentially who wants to pop the yellow? The reds you have to pop.
Exactly.
Between, and but what you want is a black ball, because then you're
maximising
your
score. Well, what you want, but you don't
score.
Always get what you want.
No, but the
popularity
otherwise
is
this would be televised.
Yes, but... I mean, fair comment.
Well, as I was saying, our mate Judas, he got struck off for driving with no lights in the pitch black. And his defence in court was, it's not black at night, it's a thing called Eigengrau. Forget about it.
Zoe.
Well, it isn't black at night, is it? It's a different light, which is dim.
It's Eigengrau.
Oh, God, I've made a massive...
It's not black at night. It's Eigengrau. You're right, Zoe.
Oh!
Eigengrau is German for intrinsic grey, and it's the colour seen by the human eye in perfect darkness.
It's my favourite colour. Well, then there is green, which comes in exactly 40 shades.
Sindhu.
I think there are 40 shades of green.
No, there are loads okay. more. Just get a Dulux chart.
Oh, isn't 40 Shades of Green a slightly racy environmentalist novel?
On the subject of the Irish, they're famous for thinking the grass always looks green on the other side. And they're not wrong. Post boxes were originally painted green in Britain to blend in with the landscape.
Zoe.
Think that's true. Think I've seen a green postbox in a museum somewhere. Or maybe I'm that old, I just remember green postboxes.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. The novelist Anthony Trollope is credited with erecting the first olive green postbox in 1852 on the Channel Islands when he was working as a district surveyor for the post office. So successful were Trollope's Channel Island pillar boxes that in 1853 they spread all over the UK mainland with rural boxes again painted green to blend with the landscape.
And there are dozens of them still out there and the post office simply haven't been able to find. A brown? It's the colour of everything in my wardrobe. Apart from my beef eater outfit and my gay pride badge. Blue next. Blue is the colour. Football is the game. We're all together and winning is our aim. So cheer us on through the sun and rain. Cause Chelsea is our name. That was a football song, David. If I had my time again, I would have just read the words out, really.
Well, it would have been easier on all of us.
This leaves the white cue ball and the black, which represent the near-extinct white and black rhinos. These are actually the same colour, which is grey.
Marcus.
Yeah, that's true. Both white and black rhinos are grey.
Absolutely right, yes.
In fact, London Zoo, they're trying to breed black and white rhinos to make a striped rhino. Like a zebra. Sadly, to put a male rhino in the mood for breeding, you have to give it crushed bits of its own horn. And that completes this frame, and I've shown you what I can do with a load of balls and a snooker cue.
Thank you, Henning. And at the end of that round, Henning, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel.
And I'll get an audition for Britain's Got Talent or any of the other singing shows.
And the truth is that the grass always looks greener on the other side because you see it from a different perspective. The grass under your feet is viewed from a 90-degree angle, while you will view your neighbour's grass at something approaching a 30 or 45-degree angle, meaning when you view your neighbour's grass, you'll see more grass behind the grass, making the grass appear greener. And that means, Henning, you've scored 1 point. Farrow and Ball paint colours include smoked trout, mouse's back and mole's breath. Coincidentally, also the set meal for one at Heston Blumenthal's Fat Duck. OK, we turn now to Zoe Lyons. Zoe, your subject is ice cream, a sweet, flavoured, frozen food containing cream. Off you go, Zoe.
Despite the region's chilly climate, Scandinavians like starting their week by eating ice cream for breakfast on a Monday. In an attempt to appeal to this Northern European market, Haagen-Dazs is completely meaningless. The creators just wanted a Danish-sounding name.
Marcus.
I think that's true.
It is true, yes. Yes, Haagen-Dazs is just two made-up words separated by a hyphen. In 1959, Reuben and Rose Mattus, a Jewish couple from the Bronx, decided to create a foreign-sounding name for their ice cream brand. Impressed by how the Danes had treated Jewish people during the German occupation, their intention was
Boring. anyway. Nothing to see here. Move on.
Their intention was to incorporate a Danish name. However, when they came up with Häagen-Dazs, they used an umlaut, which is used in German and not Danish.
Unusual flavours of ice cream that have been launched in the last couple of years include Trump Tantrum, a very basic vanilla, which has a thick layer of orange Dorito dust on top. Netflix and Chilled, released by Netflix and is best shared.
Netflix and Chilled's a flavour.
You're absolutely right.
I know. Yeah.
Yes, in 2020, Netflix, in association with Ben and Jerry's, launched an ice cream flavour called Netflix and Chilled. It's a peanut butter ice cream with sweet and salty pretzel swirls and fudge brownies. Oh, my mouth is just filled with sick. And fudge brownies, so that's...
Mr. Whippy ice cream was originally going to be called Mr. Floppy Cone. They wisely decided on Mr. Whippy as having a Mind That Child sign on the back of a van emblazoned with Mr. Floppy Cone could seem a little odd. Such matters of decency were clearly not an issue for the manufacturers of the first ice cream on a stick, whose original creation was called the Jolly Boy Sucker.
Marcus.
I think the Jolly Boy Sucker was an ice cream on a stick.
You're absolutely right. Or strictly, the Jolly Boy Sucker was the lollipop that was the prototype for the first ice cream on a stick. It was created by Harry Burt of Ohio in 1920. He inserted the stick from the Jolly Boy Sucker into his own chocolate-coated ice cream and renamed it, in, I would say, a sort of lapse of innuendo, the Good Humour Bar.
Elton John once spent £12,000 on a 10-foot-tall ice cream Knickerbocker glory.
Yeah.
Henning.
Elton John chucking 12 grand out the window for anything, really.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't on a 10-foot-tall Knickerbocker glory.
Well, if he's listening to this, that'll give him an idea. Yeah. And if you go around in a fortnight, he will have by then.
Yeah.
He's 74 now or something.
Well, I imagine he'd be something.
Yeah, I remember him very fondly. He sang Candle in the Wind.
He did, Princess
Diana.
Yep.
That was his.
And about Marilyn Monroe first.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, guys, the original version of the song is
before
about
we descend
Marilyn Monroe.
To full old people's home chat.
Sorry, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember. That was a good one, that one. Of course, he sung that, didn't he? Yeah. And then
She's dead now.
And he's Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's dead. Marion in that chair over there, she's dead. Yeah, she stopped breathing 20 minutes ago. Halfway through Pointless.
That's very rude. I think Zoe's doing a good job.
Zoe.
In the state of Alabama, it's illegal to call an ice cream a sundae as it's thought disrespectful to the Lord's Day.
Henning.
That is a fact.
No, it isn't.
Ice cream is, of course, deadly. In the 1940s, there was a public panic after doctors said that ice cream caused polio, which led to the rather brutal government slogan of the day, "Don't let raspberry ripple make you a cripple."
Henny.
That was the government slogan at the time.
No, it wasn't.
Ice cream vans in Poland were forced for a time to play Chopin's Death March as their jingle to discourage children from eating too much of the sugary treat. The original ice cream jingles were played by actual pianists who were towed behind the ice cream vans on smaller trailers. Today, the three most popular ice cream van jingles in ascending order are the Match of the Day theme, Bat Out of Hell, and the theme tune to the Antiques Roadshow.
Thank you, Zoe. And at the end of that round, Zoe, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that there was a public panic after doctors said that ice cream caused polio. US scientists in the 1940s linked the increased consumption of ice cream in the summer with the increase in polio cases, causing doctors to advise parents not to feed their children ice cream. The second truth is that the Match of the Day theme is the third most popular ice cream van jingle. In 2013, ice cream vans were permitted to play their chimes for 12 seconds every 2 minutes. Previously, it's been for 4 seconds every 3 minutes. So I think we've all noticed that change. And that means, Zoe, you've scored 2 points. Jamie Oliver has a customised Land Rover that makes ice cream in the wheel drums. Sounds like someone has just tested positive for having too much money. Next up is Sindhu V. Sindhu, your subject is apples. Round, edible fruit, which typically have thin red or green skin and crisp white flesh. Off you go, Sindhu.
Gravity was discovered when Sir Isaac Newton famously fell from an apple tree after consuming 2 liters of cider. As he sobered up, he came to the conclusion that as an apple falls to Earth, the Earth falls very, very slightly towards the apple. This explains why most earthquakes happen in autumn.
Marcus.
I think Newton did conclude that the Earth moves very slightly, very, very, very slightly towards the apple, as well as the apple moving towards the Earth. The movement of the Earth would be almost imperceptible, but I think the science will have shown.
My only criticism, I think you wasted the word almost. I think the movement of the Earth is entirely imperceptible. But nevertheless, you're absolutely right. Yeah. According to Newton's third law of motion, an apple in free fall accelerates towards the Earth with a free fall acceleration. The force of the apple on the Earth also causes the Earth to accelerate towards the falling apple. The force of the Earth on the apple is exactly equal and opposite to the force of the apple on the Earth. The mass of the Earth is about 25 orders of magnitude larger than an apple, so its acceleration is 25 orders of magnitude smaller than the apple's, i.e. virtually zero.
So, provided apples stay roughly this size, we should be fine.
Yes. You hear about these well-meaning competitions to grow the largest vegetable.
Absolutely.
And that sort of thing. And these people, you know, they've got to spend their time somehow, but they're dicing with all of our lives. Sindhu.
Gladys Knight's middle name is Apple. When she first signed with Motown Records, her band was known as Apple and the Pips.
Marcus.
I think Gladys Knight's middle name might... I think she might be Gladys Apple Knight.
It sounded more plausible,
yeah, it did.
Until you said
I'm
it.
I'm now going through a load of them. Gloria Plum Gaynor.
No, her middle name is Maria. It's immediately more plausible, isn't it?
Yeah. Because it's a name.
Yeah.
Walt Disney used an apple in his films to put his princesses into deep sleeps as he himself was allergic to apples and one mouthful could render him unconscious. He could only be revived by a true love's kiss from a qualified anesthesiologist.
Zoe.
I reckon Walt Disney was allergic to apples.
No.
Oh.
He wasn't. His middle name was Pineapple.
Yeah.
Sindhu.
Pineapples grow on pine trees. Elephant apples are bigger than footballs but are poisonous to elephants, and you should never really eat a yellow snow apple. Crab apples only travel sideways. Grapples are apples that taste like grapes. Swan apples can break your arm, and grouse apples taste like chicken, whereas giant water beetles taste like apples.
Marcus.
Grapples.
Correct.
Tastes like grapes.
A US company produce a fruit they call the grapple. They grow normal apples and then soak them in artificial grape flavouring. They say the fruit is great for kids who don't like regular tasting apples.
In ancient Japan, the apple was sacred, and even today a single apple can change hands for as much as 300 pounds.
Zoe.
Somebody's paid 300 quid for an apple in Japan.
They haven't.
Right.
It says here, Japanese Sekaiichi apples are the most expensive in the world, and they sell for more than $20 each, but not for £300.
Well, you know. Yeah. If the haulage shortages carry on, we'll all be spending £300 on apples in Co-op, so...
Absolutely, yeah. The spectre of hyperinflation. Don't panic, Henning. Sindhu.
The original Bramley apple tree has a fan club in Japan, and it's still traditional in Japan for an apple to be given as a gift on retirement.
Marcus.
I think there's a Bramley apple fan club in Japan.
There is. Yeah. Yeah. The Bramley Apple Fan Club is located in Obuse, Japan, where Bramley trees are grown and the fruit revered. Apple producer and member Hiroki Tomioka said that he nearly cried when he visited Southwell in Nottinghamshire to see the original tree that was planted in 1809.
The celebrated English actress Dame Ellen Terry died in 1926 after choking on an apple. That year, her brother, the Yorkshire confectioner Frank Terry, launched the Terry's chocolate apple in her memory. Sadly, it tasted so bad, he launched it out of the window.
Thank you, Sindhu. And at the end of that round, Sindhu, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that giant water beetles taste like apples. And the second truth is that in 1926, Frank Terry launched the Terry's chocolate apple. The chocolate orange was launched 6 years later in 1932. Terry's chocolate apple was sold for 26 years before being phased out in 1954, partly due to post-war rationing and limited imports of raw cocoa. That means, Sindhu, you've scored 2 points. It's widely believed that one of the Venus de Milo's missing hands might have been holding an apple. And in the other, an out-of-control chainsaw. It's now the turn of Marcus Brigstock. Your subject, Marcus, is spirits, beverages with a high alcohol content that are made by distillation rather than fermentation. Off you go, Marcus.
When you're handed a shot of limoncello at the end of an Italian meal, it is considered an insultato grande, or huge insult to the chef, patron, and waiting staff if you don't smash the glass immediately and declare, mmm, delicious, even though it's made of flash floor cleaner and fire.
Sindhu.
Maybe it is insulting to not drink the limoncello.
Not as far as we're aware.
Okay.
I think it's what they give you when they want you to leave.
Due to its phenomenal sugar content, a researcher managed to turn diabetic urine into a whiskey called Pisky. As far as we know, no one's ever ordered a second shot. Drinking and driving is not strictly against the law in the UK. Its legal status in a magistrate's court is frowned upon, along with brawling and corporate manslaughter.
Sindhu.
Okay, you know what? The legal term for the whole drink driving thing and whatever is frowned upon.
It isn't.
Okay, good.
There is no legal status of frowned upon.
Okay.
Although that has been cast into quite a lot of doubt recently.
Yes, I think.
In Downing Street particularly.
Yeah.
King Edward VII was a keen drunk driver and had a liquor specially created for him to drink while driving his little sports car. The liquor was called Royal Highness, which is what it sought to achieve. There are now so many flavoured vodkas available, you could have a different one every day for 17 years straight. Flavours now include hot lamb, clean linen, smoked salmon, poached egg and old leather.
Henning.
Are there in excess of 5,000 different flavours of vodka?
No, there are lots, but not that many.
Alcohol-based bar games include Kadrunk, which is similar to Kaplunk. But you pour dark rum through a tube of marbles and straws until someone passes out. Snapdragon is where you grab raisins from a bowl of burning brandy and put them straight in your mouth. And Shotopoly is where every time you land on someone's property, you have to down a shot of Jack Daniels.
Zoe.
Think I've played that. Pretty good at it. Pretty good at it.
Shotopoly.
Yeah. Shotopoly. I reckon that's a game. Well, if it's not, then it should be. Available in stores this Christmas. Shotopoly, the kids will love it.
Do you know, this is an inadvertent truth. This is not one of the truths that Marcus was trying to smuggle, but there is a game called Shotopoly.
Oh.
It doesn't specify Jack Daniels, but the rules include have a drink when you land on someone's property, take a shot if you land on a hotel, finish your drink to get out of jail.
This is how I've got through the last five Christmases. Yeah.
That's amazing. I made that up and went, yeah. Oh, that's funny.
So, yes, you get a, you get a point.
Point
you
that?
Get a point.
Yes, Mark and take a shot.
Lose a point, you get a point. Yeah.
British Airways used to give a small amount of brandy to each of their pilots just before landing to steady their nerves. And free brandy was given out at the top of the first escalator in Harrods for anyone who'd become lightheaded on the ride up.
Zoe.
I'm going to go for British Airways little nip of brandy, because back in the day, the planes were held together with just nuts and... Well, they are still held together with nuts and bolts, but they were a lot more basic, and I reckon landing them was quite tricky.
It's not true.
Right.
No. Well, certainly, it was never official policy. Sindhu.
The Harrods thing.
The Harrods thing is correct.
Finally. Oh, God.
Yes, the first escalator in Britain was installed in Harrods in 1898. The experience of travelling on it was deemed so exhilarating that attendants were employed to stand at the top with cognac for the men and smelling salts for the women. And that's the end of Marcus's lecture. And at the end of that round, Marcus, you've managed to smuggle four truths far to the rest of the panel. And were it not... Were it not for that late buzz about Harrods, it would have been the full set. The first truth is that due to its phenomenal sugar content, a researcher managed to turn diabetic urine into a whiskey called Pisky. The second truth is that King Edward VII had a liqueur specially created for him to drink while driving his open-top Daimler in the countryside. It was made with brandy, lemon and ginger. It was sold exclusively to members of the royal family and the nobility. The third truth is that flavours of vodka now include smoked salmon.
No.
That was the true one. Other unusual vodka flavours include bacon, gherkin, buttered popcorn, fresh-cut grass and whipped cream. And the fourth truth is that there's a game called Snapdragon where you grab raisins from a bowl of burning brandy and put them straight in your mouth. It was a popular, if hazardous, 16th century game that was played mainly on Christmas Eve. And that means, Marcus, you've scored 4 points. In the 1920s, French tennis player Suzanne Lenglen drank brandy between sets but won 8 Grand Slam singles titles, each one a surprise to her as she thought she was playing doubles. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 7 points, we have Henning Vane. In third place, with minus 2 points, it's Sindhu V. In second place, with plus 2 points, it's Zoe Lyons. And in first place, with an unassailable 7 points, it's this week's winner, Marcus Brigstock. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
This Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Marcus Brigstock, Zoe Lyons, Sindhu V and Henning Vane. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash, and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.